Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Sam Laidlaw here, and I'd like to welcome you all to our first earnings call. This call covers the period from the 15th of February, when we acquired the NG E&P business, up until the 30th of June 2018. Now, following on from our roadshow in April, this quarter has seen a strong performance with the continued delivery of our strategy, enabling us to be comfortably on target to reach our previously announced full-year guidance. Give you a summary of some of the key highlights of the half year, as shown on slide four. We continue to put safety first with several new initiatives in place, our main program being our safety culture project. And this really serves to reinforce the safety basics and firmly establishes health, safety, security, and environmental performance as the number one priority for Neptune. Operational performance has also been very good, and production of above expectations, and cash flow generation has been strong on the back of this, with a robust liquidity and disciplined capital allocation across our key development projects. Since the completion of the acquisition of NG's EPI business in February, we've delivered on our strategic plan to grow the business with the announcement in June of the agreement to acquire VNG Norge. This provides a high-quality bolt-on acquisition in one of our core business areas, along with an agreement to acquire two UK Central North Sea growth assets from Apache. And we expect to see both of these acquisitions complete in the next few months. Our current business and assets are outperforming expectations with strong production performance and strong financial results. This leaves us to continue building the business and take advantage of ongoing repositioning within the E&P sector. So with that, I'd like to hand over to Jim, who will give you some more details about how the business is doing.
Great. Thank you, Sam. As shown on slide five, our first year as Neptune Energy has kicked off to a very solid start. We've achieved an operating cash flow of $598 million after tax and lower operating costs per BOE versus last year. The inaugural $550 million bond issue went well, was well supported, and we obtained a double B credit rating. We have modest leverage of 34% at the half-year mark and a net debt to EBITDAX of only 0.65. Our significant liquidity of almost $1.6 billion provides ample headroom to support our overall growth strategy. As Sam mentioned, our portfolio has grown both organically and inorganically this year, including our two recent acquisitions. We are pleased to maintain our full-year production guidance, with CapEx estimates slightly below the previous outlook. Our priorities in the second half of 2018 include further operational efficiency gains, strengthening the organization, cost reductions, integrating the VNG organization into our Norwegian business, and progressing our pipeline of projects. We'll go into greater details about these later, but I'll focus on our operational performance starting on slide number seven. Production performance has been strong since the EPI acquisition closed in February this year, with average production of 165,600 barrels of oil equivalent per day in the period from the acquisition to 30th of June of this year. On a pro forma basis, production would have been 166,100 barrels of oil equivalent per day had EPI been consolidated from January 1st. We can compare this with EPI's performance of 153,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day for the equivalent period in 2017. This provides more than an 8% year-on-year growth and was principally due to the Yonk Creek field in Indonesia commencing production during May of 2017, as well as higher production exports from the Cygnus gas field in the UK. These increases have more than offset near-term regional declines in Norway and the Netherlands. In Germany, production was in line with 2017 levels. Outside Europe, specifically in Indonesia, we saw an increase in production volumes, as previously mentioned. Commodity prices improved by around 35% in the first half of 2018 compared with the same period last year, not only in oil, but also importantly in natural gas. Now, moving on to slide number eight, our capital deployment program has been targeted and disciplined as we develop our portfolio, some highlights of which you can see on the slide. The new Netherlands L58D Sierra HPHT development came on stream in February, and another well is planned to be drilled during 2019. Our 20% owned Njord redevelopment project in Norway remains on schedule and on budget, with production restart anticipated by the end of 2020. Construction of our Tawat gas project in Algeria has experienced some delays, which we have addressed with our partners. However, it is 90% complete now with all Phase 1 wells drilled. We're expecting gas exports at capacity by the end of the first half of next year in 2019. Arcara and P1 operated assets in Norway have now been combined in a pre-sanctioned phase. Full sanction of both projects is planned for early 2019, with an anticipated first production of hydrocarbons by the end of 2020, similar to other projects. We also sanctioned two incremental projects in Norway in the first half of this year, the first being the Askeladd development, which sustains the plateau of Snøhvit, the second involving three new multilateral wells in the Fram field. At our operated Rommerberg asset in southern Germany, well site upgrades have started, and preparations continue for the next three-well drilling campaign to commence by the end of this month. Looking at our exploration activity, in the first half of 2018, our cash spend on exploration and appraisal was $36.5 million. We participated in four exploration and appraisal wells, including two small discoveries in the Dutch sector, as well as successfully appraised the important Sigrun discovery in Norway. We have also been acquiring new acreage across both the UK and Norwegian sectors of the North Sea. Turning to slide 9, we have made significant progress building out the Neptune leadership team through a combination of new recruits and members from the team that joined us with the EPI acquisition. We are really pleased to have attracted candidates with very strong credentials and a shared enthusiasm to execute the vision for Neptune. We have also implemented new business processes across the group, which are more streamlined and suitable for a standalone E&P company. These include a revised management organization structure with clear accountabilities, weekly update calls with our extended global leadership team, monthly outlook reviews of actuals and updated forecasts of key business parameters, annual performance reviews with each of the countries within our portfolio, plus an improved investment approval process. In summary, we are very pleased with progress today and are continuing to build a strong foundation for the future. That I'll pass on to Peter to run through the financials.
Thank you, Jim. Good afternoon, everyone. The main event for Neptune for the results for the 6 months to 30th of June was clearly the closing of the acquisition of EPI from Engie, which took place on the 15th of February. Now, that means that our financial results include the results of the EPI business from that date when we obtained full control over the EPI business. So we're reporting 4.5 months worth of production, operating results, and cash flows from EPI. However, to assist in comparisons, we have provided a full 6 months data on a pro forma basis for a few key metrics. That said, we were, however, entitled to the economic benefit of EPI cash flows from an earlier date under the SPA, which are therefore reflected in the overall cash cost at acquisition. Now, this also means that the interim financial result statements that we have published today are quite a lengthy document, as they include a full set of accounting policies, given that it's our first report. Turning now to slide 11, our adjusted or clean net profit after tax for the period to 30th of June was $134 million. Sales revenue was $1.03 billion. Based on the production of 165.6 thousand BOE per day that Jim's discussed already. We obviously benefited from rising oil and gas prices on our unhedged production, achieving an oil price of just under $70 per barrel for the period, which is in line with dated Brent averages, and a dry gas price of $7.60 per MMBTU, also before hedging. Operating costs at $246 million, represented $10 per BOE produced, below last year's average of $10.50 per BOE, primarily due to the lower cost in the period this year for purchase of LPG to blend with our Jangkrik gas in Indonesia in order that it meets Japanese LNG specifications. Exploration expense was $23 million, which was focused on seismic data purchases. And administration expense was $31 million, which includes $7 million of non-recurring setup costs for Neptune. Accounting for the EPI business combination requires us to revalue all the acquired assets and liabilities of EPI at their fair values at the acquisition balance sheet date. And this gives us a modest uplift in the DD&A charge on a unit of production basis, which results in $277 million in total of depreciation expense for the period. And after financial expense and hedge mark-to-market adjustments, our pre-tax profit was $403 million, and an effective book tax rate of 67% on that. This all resulted in $134 million net income for the period on an adjusted basis, excluding some one-off expenses related to the EPI acquisition totaling $63 million. Those represent transaction expenses, arrangement fees, and some transfer taxes. So without that adjustment, reported net income was $70 million. Turning to cash flow, if we go to slide 12, our post-tax operating cash flow was $598 million for the period, or $26 per BOE post-tax produced in that period. Again, that's adjusted to remove the one-off acquisition-related costs. Now, as shown on the chart to the right of this slide, if we strip out the cash flows related to the EPI acquisition itself, that $598 million more than covered $91 million of cash capex in the period and $20 million of net interest costs, leaving a very healthy free cash inflow of just under $500 million for 4.5 months. Now, this was helped by a net reduction in working capital of $137 million, which should not be expected to be repeated again in the second half. If we focus on EBITDAX, so that's earnings before interest, depreciation, taxes, and exploration expense, we can compare the full 6 months to 30th of June on a pro forma basis of $939 million with a figure of $709 million for the first 6 months of last year. This reflects the 8% higher production and 30 to 40% higher oil and gas prices, and a small reduction in cost. Cash taxes, in line with the guidance previously provided, reduced to 32% of pre-tax cash flow due to higher capex in Norway, the mix of production by country, and also lower Dutch tax for this period. Now, reported cash capex is relatively low for three reasons in this period. First, the way we have to report the TUAP project. Second, some rephasing, especially at Njord. And lastly, the exclusion of the first 1.5 months of the period. On TUAT, as we established a joint venture company with NG to hold our TUAT interest, with NG continuing to fund an indirect 30% share of the project, plus financing half our indirect 35% share through the project loan, we are accounting for TUAT under the equity method of accounting. That means that our share of the TUAT project cash spend, which was $33 million for 6 months, is not actually included in the reported capex as it was funded into the joint venture company ahead of closing of the EPI transaction. The full cash flow statement also shows the purchase of EPI and the $2 billion of equity raised and the debt funding for the transaction. Now, looking further at debt on slide 13, the balance is made up of amounts drawn under our borrowing base facility, the senior notes we issued in May, the TUAP project facility from NG, and the $100 million subordinated loan. For accounting purposes, these balances are then offset by debt issuance expenses, which results in gross debt of $1.35 billion and net debt at 30th of June of $974 million. This results in a pro forma net debt to 12-month EBITDAX using the figures for EPI EBITDAX prior to our acquisition of 0.65x. And you might recall that that would compare with a pro forma figure at the start of this year, which we reported at the time of the bond offering, which was 1.0x. Leverage, or net debt to net debt plus equity, was 34% at 30th of June. Again, significantly below the pro forma at the start. So a very robust balance sheet at the mid-year. And as you know, we obtained corporate debt ratings earlier this year of Ba3 and BB- from Moody's and S&P respectively prior to the bond issue. As a result of that bond issue and our operating cash inflow, we had headroom or available liquidity of $1.6 billion in total, including the undrawn bank facility. Let me now discuss our hedging and risk management policies and activities on the next slide, number 14. We continue to run our hedging policy, layering in additional hedges of oil and gas prices for up to 3 years forward, building on the existing, mostly short-term hedge book that we novated from ENGIE at closing, as prices strengthened through the period to June. Most of the new hedges are in the form of option collars, with a put option providing us with a floor and the cost mitigated by call options, which cap the upside exposure on that hedged volume. We've shown on the right of this slide the percentage of forecast production for which revenues are hedged as at 30th of June, after taking account of different tax rates for hedges and physicals. You'll see there that we have covered a higher percentage of gas revenues from 73% for the rest of this year in the legacy hedge book to 52% and then 23% for the next 2 years, taking advantage of opportunities to lock in the presently strong European gas price outlook, which on a spot basis at present is above $9 per MMBTU. Oil hedges are a lower proportion of revenues, as we've seen more backwardation in forward prices. But we are covered in terms of the minimum hedging requirements of our bank facility. The second chart on this slide shows data on the average floor and cap prices, with more detail provided in the full first half report. Of the mark-to-market liability of the book, pre-tax at 30th of June, which totaled $231 million, $133 million relates to contracts expiring in 2018, which are mostly on gas prices. Now, finally, in this section, on slide 15, I would like to reconfirm and update the guidance that we previously provided for full year 2018. There's no change in our guidance for full year production as we provided in April. We expect to see growth on the full year EPI figure for 2017, which was 154,000 BOE per day, at a low single digit level. Notwithstanding the strong first half, this reflects some summer maintenance shutdowns in Q3 and a little natural decline. Development CapEx is likely to be slightly lower than previously expected, at around $420 million, including Tuat, rather than the $500 million or so we anticipated, both figures being for the full 12 months. If we add to that the cost of the VNG Norge deal, including the 2018 CapEx on those assets, at about $430 million in total, and the Seagull acquisition, again with this year's CapEx at $75 million, we still expect that cash flow from operations for the 12 months of this year will cover all CapEx and finance costs. And on a pro forma basis, even with these two acquisitions included, our net debt at 30th of June would have been below $1.5 billion and leverage would have been at 44%. There's no change in our previous guidance around tax rates, although as Sam will outline, the VNG Norge deal will result in a large one-off reduction in near-term Norwegian taxes. I'll now hand back to Sam for the next section.
Thank you, Peter. And let me touch on the two strategic acquisitions that we announced earlier in the year. On the 28th of June, we signed a sale and purchase agreement to acquire 100% of the share capital of VNG Norge, with completion expected later this year, subject to regulatory approvals. And as you'll see on slide 17, the acquisition provides us with an exciting strategic opportunity, with the company adding an oil-weighted portfolio that's complementary to our existing Norwegian business and assets in the greater Njord area, including the operated Fenja field development. The VNG Norge portfolio comprises 42 licenses, 5 producing fields, and 3 development projects. Net production for VNG Norge in 2017 was approximately 4,000 barrels a day, but there's an increase in production targeted by 2022 as new capacity comes on stream. And net reserves and resources for the acquired assets as of the 31st December 2017 were over 50 million barrels of oil equivalent. The base consideration for the acquisition was $352 million, including $22 million for cash and working capital, with a further $50 million of contingent consideration based on milestones linked to development of contingent resources if they occur. This consideration includes value in respect of significant tax allowances, of which we expect that, at present commodity prices, some $200 million will be realized in 2019, giving the significant synergies between the tax position of the VNG business and the existing Neptune Norwegian business. We expect the transaction to complete by year-end. The second opportunity, as shown in slide 18, is another addition to our portfolio, this time in the UK North Sea, with the acquisition of a 35% interest of the undeveloped Seagull field for $70 million, together with the Isabella exploration prospect from Apache. Completion is again expected this year, subject to customary approvals. The opportunity is consistent with our strategy to grow the business and create value from leveraging our capabilities and the realization of synergies within our core regions. The Seagull development will consist of a multi-well subsea tieback to existing nearby facilities, planned to commence development during 2019, with first production expected by 2021. Seagull provides attractive development economics at moderate cost with well-established export routes. The Seagull field will add some 13 million barrels of oil equivalent net 2P reserves and provide an additional 12,000 barrels a day of net production by 2022. The transaction has accretive metrics and the potential for tax synergies with our existing strong UK asset base. With Seagull comes the high-risk, high-reward Isabella prospect, considered as one of the larger undrilled exploration opportunities in the central North Sea, which we expect to drill next year. So turning to page 19, you can see that we aim to continue to leverage our strong performance in the first half of the year. And in the second half, our priorities are going to be to continue to drive both safety and operational excellence, to further strengthen the organization, to continue to drive out costs, to close and integrate both the VNG and the Apache acquisitions, and to drive forward the Tuat, Kara, P1, Fenja, and Seagull developments. And with these foundations in place, we'll continue to develop the growth pipeline. So in summary, on slide 20, Neptune Energy has experienced a strong first half of the year with operational excellence and production outperformance, delivering robust financials, and strong cash flow and disciplined capital allocation, all of which allow us to deliver 2 excellent strategic bolt-on acquisitions. For the full year, we expect low single-digit growth in production and strong cash flow generation. We're excited to continue to develop Neptune Energy into a leading independent international E&P company. So I think that brings our presentation to a close. Thank you very much all for listening. And I'd very much like to hand over to the operator now, who's going to provide instructions as to how to answer questions for those of you who joined late on the call. Operator, if you'd like to repeat the instructions, I think that'd be helpful.
Thank you, Sam. Just a quick reminder for everyone who wants to ask a question on phone. If you would like to submit a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad and wait till you're introduced by me. Please ensure that your line is unmuted locally. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star followed by two. Our first question is from Michael Bowen from Sona. Michael, your line is
hi,
open.
Hi. There seems to be a couple of misconceptions in the marketplace that it is causing your bonds to, I guess, lag your peers at the present time, given the excellent numbers that you've just put out. The first is that, you know, the acquisitions will be funded with bond financing at some point in time, and you will come back to the market. And the second one seems to be a misunderstanding of what I think was enshrined in the charter of the organization, that you would not, or that you would not allow leverage to exceed 1.5 times. Can you talk to both of those points, please?
Yeah, both excellent points, Michael. I'll let Peter deal with the first one in terms of, you know, bond financing for acquisitions and the possibility of coming back to the market. And then I'll speak to the second one in terms of our shareholder agreement that in principle we won't allow leverage to exceed 1.5 times EBITDA.
Okay, so on financing the VNG acquisition in particular, but also the smaller Seagull cost, right, let's remember firstly that about $200 million, as Sam said, of the VNG acquisition cost is a very short-term funding requirement, and that will come back in terms of tax synergies because we are acquiring a company that has very substantial tax losses. And as we combine that with our own business, which has substantial Norwegian tax payments to make, you can see the efficiency of having Fenja in a portfolio of a company that is paying tax as it goes through development. So the 450 or thereabouts headline number is significantly reduced in the near term, leaving a smaller net cost. But of course, then CapEx to go on the Fenja development. We do not need to go to the bond issue to finance that. We can fund it. You know, that was one of the purposes, as you'll recall, of the bond issue we did back in April and May, was to increase our flexibility for doing things like this. So between that and the bank facility we have, which is less than half drawn at the moment, 30th of June, we have the capacity to fund that easily. But that said, yeah, like every company, of course, we will continue to monitor opportunities when it's right to do financings. If the market is suitable and attractive to do it, so yeah, we'll never rule it out. But the VNG deal can be comfortably funded within the existing facilities and resources.
And Michael, to your second question, clearly, as we indicated, the 30th of June, you know, we're only at 0.65 EBITDA in terms of net debt, even if we include the acquisitions that we've done. As Peter indicated, on a pro forma basis, we would be at 1 time. And of course, as I indicated in my remarks on VNG, we do expect, you know, some of that to be self-funding through the tax synergies. In terms of, you know, where we could potentially go, as we indicated during the roadshow presentations, I think there would be, under our shareholder agreement, certainly we would not expect to go above 1.5 times. Now, I'm not sure that actually that is having an impact on the bonds. You will know better than I. I think, you know, part of it has been just the fact that this is a new story, but also obviously in the world of rising interest rates, I think the whole sector has traded off a little bit.
No, I mean, I think people are concerned. Well, people seem to have concerns around an imminent return to the bond market, which, you know, given where the bonds trade and given the cost of your bank debt, makes absolutely no sense at all, and the availability that you have.
No, I agree with that.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much for your time, and very well done on a good set of numbers.
Thank you. Operator, any further questions?
Yeah, we have another last question from Dil Dutanakis from Chenavari Investment Managers. Your line is open now. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Congratulations for the very good results. Just I had three questions, actually. One is if you can help me understand a bit the significant rally that we've seen in the UK gas prices and what kind of made you increase hedging there on a forward basis. And a second question is, I saw on an industry magazine today an article on Twat saying that the initial wells are doing better than expected. If you can provide any more comments on that. And thirdly, just a bit more details if possible. I'm a bit surprised at how low the CapEx has been. You explained some of the factors there, but even for the full year, it seems like the CapEx is much lower. It's quite a bit lower than the initial guidance. So if you can provide a couple of factors to explain that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So let me deal with the first one around UK gas prices, and then I'll let Jim speak to it and Peter speak to the low CapEx. What's happening in Europe, I think, is a result initially of a very cold winter, resulting in the need to replenish storage, and then a very hot summer, resulting in considerable demand for gas-fired generation, particularly with some nuclear outages, with low water levels in Europe and so forth. I think we're entering the winter season with lower storage levels than we would normally see, and of course in the UK in particular, with the Rough storage facility no longer being available as a result of the fact that it's being used as a producer. That actually means that storage levels are quite tight and demand is strong. So, as of today, we're seeing, 77p for November gas. Clearly with the benefit of hindsight, arguably we should have hedged a little bit less, which is the second part of your question, but this is all about risk management. And what we're doing with our hedges is actually doing a variety of, as Peter indicated, we're almost exclusively doing collars so that we do preserve the upside, and the prices that we've shown, if you like, in the chart reflect the floors. So there's certainly upside on those prices in the chart. But it's something we manage dynamically. It's also something, of course, that we have to do, as Peter alluded to, in order to be compliant with our RBL financing as well. So we will continue to layer in a disciplined manner, but clearly do more when we see strong prices and less backwardation, and slightly less when we see weaker prices and a higher backwardation. Jim, do you want to speak to that?
Hello, Dio. Glad to see you're following us through industry publication. Regarding the comments that were on Twat for the well deliverability, obviously we're very happy to say that the first batch of wells they drilled to sustain the initial plateau for the plant for a initial investment decision. So they drilled a number of wells to give themselves about an 8 to 9 year plateau. And as a result of testing these wells, they have a deliverability that's actually 50% more than what was their target. And then on top of that, they performed a round of extended well tests, which shows well performance and drawdowns and certain things like that, and went in and updated their reservoir models. And through both initial tests and extended testing, we're seeing that the wells are outperforming, and we've got initially 50% more deliverability. And what that enables us to do is likely postpone the next phase of drilling, which was due to come on in another year or two. And so with that, and after we get the plant up and running and do some things to tweak the performance of the plant, they'll give us some options around looking further down the road at our development plot. But it's a good news story.
And I think to your thank you, Jim. Let Peter speak to the surprisingly low levels of CapEx in the first half and indeed for the full year.
Yeah, so if we focus on the full year, perhaps the guidance I think we gave in April was about $500 million for development CapEx and about $100 million for exploration and appraisal for this year. So I think, again, if we look at on a full year basis, so like for like, we're seeing exploration just a little bit below that, more like $90 million for the full year. But we are seeing development CapEx somewhat lower. So as we've said in this report, at about 420 rather than 500. So the key factors in that shift, well, there's three or four things really in there I'd mention. Excuse me. We've seen some delay and some rephasing within projects, albeit that the overall first production date remains on track. So Njord's seen some rephasing just between periods, principally due to heavy lift activities, but some lower spend, certainly in the first half of this year. Tuat, we have actually seen some slippage in the project, and most likely in the first gas date as well, which, as you've seen, we're talking first half next year. So that does reduce the spend in the development category, and also a little bit of slippage in Germany as well. On the other hand, I mean, there's some good news stories in there. In the on Jan Crick, the underspend in the year to date is really more due to release of contingencies that were being held over for the project as it completed last year and were not necessary. So spend there has been down for a very good reason. So it's a mix of different factors. And then on top of that, we layer this reporting issue that we don't have 1.5 months of the spend, which was actually quite significant in the first month or so of the year. And we don't have Tuat included in this number. So the forecast, or if you like, the EPI number for the first half of $160 million or so reduces down to about 90 as Neptune has reported for the 4.5 months for those purely reporting reasons. The cash spend is still obviously taking place in the background. So those are the main reasons. Having said that, of course, our CapEx outlook for next year, again, we talked of guidance previously that we had about $360 million, if you like, on the books from projects already undergo for development spend. But we indicated a more likely level continuing at the 500 level or a bit more. And obviously adding Fenja does increase development spend in 2019. Although actually, when you take account of the tax offsets for that development spend, the overall net cash impact isn't that great. But we can expect perhaps $150 million of additional Fenja development spend next year. So we are filling up the development spend hopper, if you like, with that and with Seagull, with projects which will be producing in the 2021-2022 period.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Operator, can we move on perhaps to, I see Bilal Khan from Nomura has got a question.
That's right, Bilal Khan from Nomura Securities. Bilal, you're not Bilal. Open now.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, Bilal. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Hello. Thanks, guys. Well, one of my questions has been answered. I guess the second one is really around, I guess, goes back to when you did the bond deal. Did you feel, or are there, you have conversation with the rating agencies that you were perhaps unfairly rated? I think one of the reasons is specified as a lack of track record, even though you're carved out of a very established business. And obviously the credit metrics and the financial discipline that you've displayed and sort of foresee for the future should, at least in my view, should recognize a higher rating or a better credit profile. So is that something that you've discussed or think about, or just so your perspective would be helpful?
Yeah, I mean, I'll let sort of Peter build on this, but I think, you know, certainly as a debut offering, also I think the area I think that we felt perhaps we were less understood than some, was simply around the fact that we have a large contingent resource base. We also have very strong cash flow. And we felt that we were penalized a bit by the R2P, which obviously these transactions that we have recently done, and we'll, when we do our reserve upgrade at the end of the year, I think you know we'll see the impact of that, are a step in the right direction in terms of lengthening the R2P and demonstrating that we can sustainably add growth for value. I think there was no question that the balance sheet and the cash flow generation of the business is strong, but I think the rating agencies quite naturally wanted to satisfy themselves that we were going to spend that cash flow wisely and sustain the production profile in a way that adds value to bondholders and shareholders.
I think the only thing to add to build on that is I think it is about showing the pipeline of growth opportunities, but within a framework of financial discipline to access those opportunities. So getting projects like Kara and P1 in Norway moving, getting those two actual sanctions, as you can see, they're progressing towards that point by early next year. That must help. I imagine, in showing some additional production generated organically with it in the portfolio from the Kara discovery, and likewise inorganically, the Fenja development project. Again, it can be financed efficiently on a post-tax basis, but it does go to the R2P point that Sam's just made, I think, and shows that through a combination of both inorganic and organic, we can address those issues, and indeed are already making rapid progress to address those issues.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Bilal. I think we've got a question from Peter at Lionshield, too.
Yes. Your line is open now. Please go ahead, George.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for taking my questions. Just two, if I may. How should we think about your leverage developing throughout the remainder of the year and towards the end of 2018? And also following some of the wells overperforming, will and when or should we expect any revise in the reserves and the reserves profile?
So I'll let Peter take the question around leverage. Let me take the second one perhaps first very quickly. I mean, what we would aim to do is update reserves on an annual basis, and therefore and we go through these with an external auditor, and therefore I think it will be the full year report, which effectively will be in February before we have a reserve upgrade that we publish.
And on the outlook for debt levels and leverage, well, we've given you a pro forma number at 30th of June of net debt adjusted for the acquisition cost. Of course, what that doesn't, that advances the cash out for the acquisitions to 30th of June. It doesn't advance the cash in from operating cash flow that we will get in the second half of the year to contribute as well. So we've also said that overall, even after those acquisitions, current commodity prices, and with our production outlook, we do expect to more than cover those expenditures, i.e. to be net cash positive at the level after capex, taxes, and finance costs for the year as a whole.
Thank you. And just quickly following up on the reserves, I mean, should we... But maybe it's too early to say, but should we generally expect that the reserves would trend upwards, or there are some risks that may offset benefits?
Well, I think it's too early to give a definitive picture. But what we can say is obviously production will naturally have depleted some of the resource base. But I think we said at the offering memorandum stage in the roadshow that we had already identified things like the Fram development and moving forward sort of Kara and P1 and various other things that were actually moving contingent resources into 2P, and then of course we've got the acquisitions on top of that. So, you know, I would hope that we would certainly more than replace reserves, but we have to do the detailed work. We're not seeing, you know, if there was any material downgrades, we would advise you, but we haven't seen any.
Okay, thank you.
As a final reminder, please press star followed by one to ask a question through the telephone.
So, are there any further questions either on the phone or on the webcast? If there are no further questions, if there are no further questions, okay. If there are no further questions, can I thank you all very much for your participation, both in the bond itself, but also in the call. We hope you found this useful. We will, you know, aim to continue on a quarterly basis. Obviously, the first presentation was fairly fulsome because it's a new business, but certainly we will keep the discipline and order of reporting on a quarterly basis. And if in the interim any of you have got any questions, please don't hesitate to follow up by email to investors@neptuneenergy.com. And you know, we will do our best to answer them, and we certainly want to stay engaged with all of you as we develop the business into being the leading independent international E&P company. So thank you all very much.